Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to today's program. I'm Tracy McClure with you over the next half hour. Today, headed home. Pope Benedict prepares to return to Germany on a six-day apostolic journey that will take him to his birthplace in Bavaria. The theme of his trip, he who believes will never be alone. On today's special program, we'll bring you excerpts of a lengthy interview in which he looks forward to his journey and expresses his hopes for the future of the Church in Germany and Europe, his fellow countrymen, and his hopes for his ministry of the See of Peter. Believes will never be alone. With that theme in mind, Pope Benedict heads to his native Germany Saturday for a six-day visit. The Pope will be returning to his native Bavaria, where he will visit the village of Marktl am Inn, where he was born, and preside a series of masses in Munich and other places. He plans to devote some of his time to family, spending a day with his brother Georg Ratzinger in Regensburg, and visiting the graves of his parents and sister at a local cemetery.
Vorrei infine affidare il viaggio apostolico che compierò in Germania a partire da sabato prossimo.
At the traditional Wednesday audience in St. Peter's Square this week, Pope Benedict entrusted his trip to the Virgin Mary and prayed for a renewed season of faith and progress for the German people.
Accompagnatemi, cari amici, in questa mia visita che affido alla Vergine Santa, sia lei a guidare i miei passi, sia lei a ottenere per il popolo tedesco una rinnovata primavera di fede e di civile progresso.
Speaking early in August to German media and Vatican Radio, the Pope said he was looking forward to returning to his homeland, and the importance of Christ as our homeland is one of the very themes he intends to touch on while he is in Germany.
Of course, the purpose of the visit is precisely because I want to see again the places where I grew up, the people who touched and shaped my life. I want to thank these people. Naturally, I also want to express a message that goes beyond my country, just as my ministry calls me to do. I simply let the liturgical recurrences suggest the themes to me. The basic theme is that we have to rediscover God, not just any God, but the God that has a human face. Because when we see Jesus Christ, we see God. Starting from this point, we must find the way to meet each other in the family, among generations, and then among cultures and peoples as well. We must find the way to reconciliation and to peaceful coexistence in this world, the ways that lead to the future. We won't find these ways leading to the future if we don't receive light from above. So I didn't choose very specific themes, but rather it's the liturgy that leads me to express the basic message of faith, which naturally finds its place in everyday reality, where we want to search, above all, for cooperation among peoples and possible ways that can lead us to reconciliation and peace.
Observers say that since Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger's election to the papacy, interest in the Catholic Church has made a comeback in Germany. But is that newfound interest enough to counter what had become a trend in Germany and in much of Europe? I'm talking about dwindling church attendance, fewer baptisms, and less church influence on society. What does the Pope think?
I'd say, first of all, that Germany is part of the West, with its own characteristic colouring, obviously, and that in the Western world today, we are experiencing a wave of new and drastic enlightenment, or secularization, whatever you like to call it. It's become more difficult to believe, because the world in which we find ourselves is completely made up of ourselves, and God, so to speak, doesn't appear directly anymore. We don't drink from the source anymore, but from the vessel which is offered to us already full, and so on. Humanity has rebuilt the world by itself, and finding God inside this world has become more difficult. This is not specific to Germany. It's something that's valid throughout the world, especially in the West. Then again, today the West is being strongly influenced by other cultures in which the original religious element is very powerful. These cultures are horrified when they experience the West's coldness towards God. This presence of the sacred in other cultures, even if often veiled, touches the Western world again. It touches us at the crossroads of so many cultures. The quest for something bigger wells up again from the depths of Western people and in Germany. We see how in young people there's the search for something more. We see how the religious phenomenon is returning, as they say, even if it's a search that's rather indefinite. But with all this, the Church is present once more, and faith is offered as the answer. I think that this visit, like the visit to Cologne, is an opportunity because we can see that believing is beautiful, that the joy of a huge, universal community possesses a transcendental strength, that behind this belief lies something important, and that together with the new searching movements, there are also new outlets for the faith that lead us from one to the other, and that are also positive for society as a whole.
Pope Benedict also clearly believes today's young people can offer another positive influence on society. What message will he be bringing them 1 year on from his trip to Cologne, Germany, where he celebrated his first World Youth Day as Pope?
First of all, I'd say that I'm very happy there are young people who want to be together. You want to be together in faith and who want to do something good. The tendency to do good is very strong in young people. Just think of the many kinds of volunteer work they do. The commitment of offering your own personal contribution to help the needy of this world is a great thing. One idea might be to encourage them in this sphere. Go ahead, look for opportunities to do good. The world needs this desire to do good. It needs this commitment. Then another message might be this, the courage to make definitive decisions. Young people are very generous, but when they face the risk of a long, lifelong commitment, be it marriage or a priestly vocation, they are afraid. The world is moving dramatically. Nowadays, I can continually do whatever I want with my life, with all its unpredictable future events. By making a definitive decision, am I myself not tying up my personal freedom and depriving myself of freedom of movement? Reawaken the courage to make definitive decisions. They're really the only ones that allow us to grow, to move ahead and to reach something great in life. They are the only decisions that do not destroy our freedom, but offer to point us in the right direction. Risk making this leap, so to speak, towards the definitive, and so embrace life fully. This is something I'd be happy to communicate to them.
And while today's youth hold the future of the church and society in their hands, it is Germany's past that has formed the direction of the faith in much of Europe. It was in Germany in 1517 that Martin Luther broke with the doctrinal orthodoxy of the church in Rome and set forth his vision of the Reformation, leading to the creation of Protestant and evangelical communities. Does Pope Benedict see any challenges in the relationship between the Catholic Church and these Christian denominations?
Maybe it's important to say, first of all, that there are marked differences within the evangelical church. If I'm not mistaken, in Germany we have three important communities: Lutherans, Reformed, and Prussian Union. There are also several free churches, Freikirchen, and within the traditional churches there are movements like the Confessional Church, and so on. It's a collection of many voices, therefore, with which we have to enter a dialogue, searching for unity while respecting the multiplicity of the voices with which we want to collaborate. I believe that the first thing we need to do is to concern ourselves with clarifying, establishing, and putting into practice important ethical directives in society, thus guaranteeing a social ethical consistency without which society cannot fulfill its political ends, namely justice for all, living together in a positive way, and peace. In this sense, I think a lot is already achieved, that we already agree on the common Christian basics before the great moral challenges. Of course, then we have to witness to God in a world that has problems finding him, as we said, and to make God visible in the human face of Jesus Christ, to offer people access to the source without which our morale becomes sterile and loses its point of reference, to give joy as well, because we are not alone in this world. Only in this way joy is born before the greatness of humanity. Humanity is not an evolutionary product that turned out badly. We are the image of God. We have to move on these two levels, so to speak, the level of important ethical points of reference and the level that manifests the presence of God, a concrete God, starting from within and working towards them. If we do this, and especially if in all our single communities we try not to live the faith in a specific fashion, but always starting from its deepest basics, then maybe we still won't reach external manifestations of unity quickly, but we will mature towards an interior unity that, God willing, one day will bring with it an exterior form of unity too.
While Benedict nourishes hope for growing Christian unity, many in his own Germany and elsewhere are turning to the Catholic Church with renewed interest and curiosity.
I'd say that the entire pontificate of John Paul II drew people's attention and brought them together. What happened at the time of his death remains something historically very special, how thousands, hundreds of thousands of people flowed towards St. Peter's Square in an orderly fashion, stood for hours, and while they should have collapsed, they resisted as if moved by an inner strength. Then we relived the experience on the occasion of the inauguration of my pontificate, and again in Cologne. It's very beautiful when the experience of community becomes an experience of faith at the same time, when the experience of community doesn't happen just anywhere, but that this experience becomes more alive and gives to Catholicism its luminous intensity right there in the places of the faith. Of course, this has to continue in everyday life. The two must go together. On one hand, the great moments during which one feels how good it is to be there, that the Lord is present, and that we form a great community reconciled beyond all boundaries. From here we get the impetus to resist during the tiring pilgrimage of everyday existence, to live starting from these bright points and turning towards them, knowing how to invite others to join our pilgrim community. I'd like to take this opportunity to say, I blush when I think of all the preparations that are made for my visit, for everything that people do, My house was freshly painted. A professional school redid the fence. The evangelical professor helped to do the fence. And these are just small details. But they're a sign of the many things that are done. I find all of this extraordinary, and I don't think it's for me, but rather a sign of wanting to be part of this faith community and to serve one another. Demonstrating this solidarity means letting ourselves be inspired by the Lord. It's something that touches me, and I'd like to express my gratitude with all my heart.
Pope Benedict will be returning to a Germany that recently has had a number of occasions to celebrate, among them last year's World Youth Day events and this year's World Soccer Championships. Some Germans say they feel their society is more open to the world, more tolerant, and more joyful. What would Pope Benedict like to see from his fellow Germans?
I'd say that from the end of the Second World War, German society began an inner transformation. The German way of thinking, too, which was further reinforced after reunification. We've become more deeply part of world society, and naturally we've been changed by its mentality. Aspects of the German character, which others weren't aware of before, have come to light. Perhaps we were always depicted too much as very disciplined and reserved, which has some basis in truth. But if we now see better that which everyone is seeing, I think it's lovely. Germans aren't just reserved, punctual and disciplined. They're also spontaneous, happy and hospitable. This is very lovely. This is my hope, that these virtues may continue to grow and that they may last and may receive added impetus from the Christian faith.
From its origins in the Holy Land, the Christian faith spread across the globe from Europe. But what future does one of the world's oldest religions have on the old continent, where secularists have made big inroads into ridding nations of religion?
I'd like to introduce a few subtleties. It's true, as we know, that Christianity began in the Near East, and for a long time its main development continued there. Then it spread in Asia much more than what we think today after the changes brought about by Islam. Precisely for this reason, its axis moved noticeably towards the West and Europe. Europe, we're proud and pleased to say so, further developed Christianity in its broader intellectual and cultural dimensions. But I think it's important to remind ourselves about the Eastern Christians, because there's the present danger of them emigrating. These Christians who've always been an important minority, living in a fruitful relationship with the surrounding reality. There's a great danger that these places where Christianity had its origins will be left without Christians. I think we need to help them a lot so that they can stay. But getting back to your question, Europe definitely became the center of Christianity and its missionary movement. Today, other continents and other cultures play with equal importance in the concert of world history. In this way, the number of voices in the church grows, and this is a good thing. It's good that different temperaments can express themselves, the special gifts of Africa, Asia and America, Latin America in particular. Of course, they're all touched not only by the word of Christianity, but by the secular message of this world that carries to other continents the disruptive forces we've already experienced. All the bishops from different parts of the world say, we still need Europe, even if Europe is only a part of a greater whole. We still carry the responsibility that comes from our experiences, from the science and technology that was developed here, from our liturgical experience to our traditions, the ecumenical experiences we've accumulated. All this is very important for the other continents too. So it's important that today we don't give up, feeling sorry for ourselves and saying, look at us, we're just a minority. Let's at least try and preserve our small number. We have to keep our dynamism alive, open relationships of exchange, so that new strength for us comes from there. Today there are Indian and African priests in Europe, even in Canada, where many African priests work in a very interesting way. There's this reciprocal give and take. But if we receive more in future, we also need to continue giving with courage and with growing dynamism.
But how can this dynamism be seen in the way the church is actually run? How does Pope Benedict see the tensions and equilibrium between the primacy of the Pope on one hand and the collegiality of the bishops on the other?
Of course, there is a relationship of tension and equilibrium, and we say that's the way it has to be. Multiplicity and unity must always find their reciprocal rapport, and this relationship must insert itself in ever new ways into the changing situations in the world. We have a new polyphony of cultures nowadays in which Europe is no longer the determining factor. Christians on the various continents are starting to have their own importance, their own characteristics. We must keep learning about this fusion of the different components. We've developed various instruments to help us, the so-called ad limina visits of the bishops, which have always taken place. Now they're used much more in order to speak sincerely with all the offices of the Holy See and with me. I speak personally to each bishop. I've already spoken to nearly all the bishops of Africa and with many of the bishops from Asia. Now it's the turn of Central Europe, Germany, Switzerland. In these encounters in which the center and the periphery come together in an open exchange of views, I think that the correct reciprocal exchange in this balanced tension grows. We also have other instruments like the synod, the consistory, which I shall be holding regularly and which I would like to develop. Without having a long agenda, we can discuss current problems together and look for solutions. Everyone knows that the Pope is not an absolute monarch, but that he has to personify, you might say, the totality that comes together to listen to Christ. There's a strong awareness that we need a unifying figure that can guarantee independence from political powers and that Christians don't identify too much with nationalism. There's an awareness of the need for a higher and broader figure that can create unity in the dynamic integration of all parties and that can embrace and promote multiplicity. So I believe there's a close bond between the Petrine ministry, which is expressed in the desire to develop it further, so that it responds both to the Lord's will and to the needs of the times.
After the globe-trotting pilgrim pope, John Paul II, Pope Benedict has chosen to make fewer foreign trips, partly in response to his own needs and limits. What other trips besides Germany is he planning? And, after spending most of his life outside the Vatican walls, is he ever lonely?
To tell the truth, I'm not that lonely. Of course, there are, you may say, the walls that make it more difficult to get in, but there's also a pontifical family, lots of visitors every day, especially when I'm in Rome. The bishops come and other people, there are state visits. There are also personalities who want to talk to me personally and not just about political issues. In this sense, there are all kinds of encounters that, thank God, I have continually. And it's also important that the seat of the successor of Peter be a place of encounter, don't you think? From the time of John the 23rd onwards, the pendulum began to swing in the other direction too. The popes started going out to visit others. I have to say that I've never felt strong enough to plan many long trips. But where such trips allow me to communicate a message, or where, shall I say, it's in response to a sincere request, I'd like to go, in the measure that's possible for me. Some are already planned. Next year there's the meeting of CELAM, the Latin American Episcopal Council in Brazil, and I think that being there is an important step in the context of what Latin America is living so intensely, to strengthen the hope that's so alive in that part of the world. Then I'd like to visit the Holy Land, and I hope to visit it in a time of peace. For the rest, we'll see what Providence has in store for me.
And those were excerpts from a lengthy interview with Pope Benedict conducted by German media and Vatican Radio this past August. Pope Benedict will be leaving Italy for Germany on Saturday, September 9th. He will be returning to Rome next Thursday. Thank you. Well, that brings today's program to a close. I'm Tracy McClure, thanking you for joining me for the last half hour. Tune in again tomorrow at the same time and on this same channel for the next English feature program, or you can hear us at any time of the day or night by clicking on our website. That's vaticanradio.org. Just look for the English service. We'd also love to hear your comments or suggestions, so send us an email. We appreciate snail mail, too. Just send us a note to the English Service at Vatican Radio, Piazza Pia 3, Vatican City, 00120. Again, thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudator Jesus Christus.